Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good day and welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli, and you get to put up with me for another hour today by your own choice, and thank you for being here. Today, we'll be talking about the evolution of communications in law enforcement. Looking back, we'll start with the history of the town crier, if any of y'all know what that is, and work our way up to today's technology and our world of things like voice over IP, trunking systems, repeater systems, cellular communications, and more. Joining us on today's show is Officer Max Schulte, a veteran officer with a large state agency. Max's assignment has him working in and around a metropolitan area that faces about every challenge any given city can face, from high crime rates to potential terrorist threats and more. As I had some preliminary conversations with Max across the last couple of days, it became blatantly clear that he knows far more about contemporary communications than I do, and he politely agreed to be a guest on the show. We appreciate having him. It saves me from having to do the whole thing alone, and it saves you all from having to listen to that. I know we're all thankful. Max will be joining me after the first break. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, thought you'd like to share, please do call in. That's why we have the number there. If for some reason you're not comfortable calling but you want to share a comment, email it to me at email address is frankborelli@officer.com, F-R-A-N-K-B-O-R-E-L-L-I at officer.com. We're going to talk about phonetic alphabets later. In my agency, that would have been Frank Robert Adam, Nora King, Baker Ocean Robert, Edward Lincoln Lincoln Ida. Other people use different things. Military use different things. We're going to talk about that. And, of course, phonetic abbreviations can be used to say things that are inappropriate, even here on the radio, because we're not supposed to say certain things on the radio. But you could say them in phonetic language. Any of you have seen the movie The A-Team are very familiar with Alpha Mike Foxtrot, AMF. Obviously, we're not going to say what that really means on the radio, but it's an example that I'll use. So if you have a comment you want to share, you're not comfortable calling, email it in. Today's show, like all of our shows, will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page to find it for reference or for future listening to use as however you need it as a resource. It's there. All you have to do is go to the Media Center blue navigation bar, and you'll see the link for Officer.com radio right next to the link for our podcast library. I'd appreciate it if you bookmark it. It's good for my ego. Do you some good. Make it easy to find later down the road. It also makes me look good to my bosses, so help me out. As you hopefully well know, Officer.com has both a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for the radio show, scheduled guests, etc., will be posted and tweeted accordingly. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. So now that we got all that admin stuff out of the way, let's get into this show about communications. You know, a long time ago, before there were phones or radios, people had to shout or they had to whistle. You know, the town crier. If you guys have seen this in movies, the guy standing on a tower or on a rampart or something, and he screams out the time and what the condition of anything is. Max and I will talk about that and see if he knows the history of it and why it was created and how it worked. But when you think about it, that was kind of the first communications that was developed as a standard for public safety or for peacekeeping. You know, as you move forward in history, we end up with things like call boxes, and you can still see those in some places today. I know I've seen them in Washington, the District of Columbia. We eventually got in-car radios, and I actually remember a time in the late 80s where some agencies had portable radios and some agencies only had in-car radios. And when you think about that in terms of contemporary law enforcement, the officers that only had in-car radios, once they got out of their car, they were without the communications lifeline. And we all know what that value is when you're dealing with an unknown, when you're answering a call, when you've pulled somebody over on traffic. That lifeline, that ability to push a button and say, this is what I have, or I need this information, or God forbid, send me the world because something's gone ugly. We all know what that lifeline is like. And it's hard to believe that, I want to say it's short time ago, but 3 decades ago, 30 years ago, there were still people in law enforcement that did not have anything outside their car. The radio was mounted in the car. We're going to talk about scanners and the pros and the cons and how people use them and whether it's good for us or bad for us or both. We're going to talk about portable radios, UHF versus VHF. We're going to talk about trunking systems, repeater systems. You know, there's different pros and cons to a lot of things. Eventually, we're going to move into the voice over IP conversation. We're going to talk about interoperability, how things are working, how they're not working, what do we need to do, and what do we, you know, what we need, we know we need to do, and what we haven't done yet versus what we have done and the building blocks that are there. We'll talk about cell phones. You know, most of the time in law enforcement, we talk about cell phones, two big worries come up. How do we get information out of them legally to use making a case? And how do we keep anybody from getting our information out of our own so that nobody can ever use them against us? I've seen them used in training. I've seen them used in searches. I've seen construction people use them as illumination tools in dark environments. So we'll talk about cell phones, too. They do play a role in modern communications. We're talking about 10 codes and signals. The last agency I worked at, we had 10 codes. Everybody knows what 10 codes are. We see them on in movies. They were popular with CBers back in the day, 10-4. You know, what's your, if for me, 10-20, what was your location? 10-9, I'm busy. 10-7, I'm out of service. 10-8, I'm in service. All the 10 codes, we had a whole list of them. But then we also had signals so that if we were being dispatched to a call and we didn't, the dispatcher obviously didn't want everybody and their brother to know what kind of call we were going to. You're going to armed robbery or something. You're going to homicide. You're going to a call for a sexual assault. You're going to call for domestic disturbance, whatever. They could say it was a signal this or signal that. And everybody has their own different signals. Part of our conversation today will be, is that a blessing or a curse that every different agency seems to have its own different 10 codes and signals? I know of a county nearby has 22 different law enforcement agencies that work in it, and I think most of them use the same 10 codes and signals, but they all have their own little quirks, and they can be radically different. For me, where I worked, a signal 13 was a bad thing. It meant an officer was in trouble and needed help. And you got there as fast as you could get there. Other places, a signal 13 means I'm out eating lunch, or you know my car's got a flat tire. There's different things. So when you start crossing municipal boundaries, state boundaries, county boundaries, when you start going into different jurisdictions, it's easy to say something that you didn't mean to say. You meant to say I'm out of service, and you said, send me the chief because blah, blah, blah. I mean, you just never know. We're going to talk about phonetic alphabets. Like I said, the difference between military, law enforcement, and some agency-specific stuff. Some of the fun stuff, the words that we can't say, but we can use the abbreviations or we can use a phonetic alphabet to say it. And if you use the phonetic alphabet to say the acronym, and if you say the acronym, then you know what's really being said, and actually can cause quite a bit of humor. I know my friends, my law enforcement friends, we can have a whole conversation using 10 codes, signals, and phonetic alphabet, and the person standing next to us doesn't have a clue while we're enjoying a joke or while we're sharing vital intelligent for information that we need without the people around us knowing what's going on. We're going to talk about the laptops in police cars. You know, in the mid-90s, I think MDTs were really starting to hit big, and now it seems like there's a laptop in every cruiser. There's strengths. There's weaknesses to that. There's the pros and cons. certainly there's some terrific ones out there, and I'm not going to get into who makes a good laptop, who makes a bad laptop. I think it's a lot of it's all in the use. But if you've got a laptop in a cruiser, it better be ready for a couple of things. It better be ready for prisoners who fight if you transport in your passenger seat. It better be ready for spilled coffee, because even if your agency has a protocol prohibiting it, people do it anyway. Or water, or food crumbs. It just better be ruggedized properly. I actually tested one a while back, and I was able to pour an entire couple orange juice, 12 ounces of orange juice into the keyboard, and the manufacturer said, it'll work. It's fine. And lo and behold, it did. I poured the orange juice in there, and it sat for a couple of minutes. And then I rinsed it out with a garden hose, and it worked great. Didn't have an issue in the world. And that's pretty much what we need today. You got to be able to drop them. God forbid. I mean, we don't hit people with things intentionally, but if you've got your laptop because you're cleaning out your cruiser and you're going into the station or you're going into your house or you're going out to the scene where you're taking a statement and you need your laptop and there's a threat that's perceived and you use that laptop as a defensive tool, it better be able to take that abuse. Of course, at that point, you really don't care, but it's nice if you don't, your agency doesn't have to replace a $3,000 or $4,000 piece of equipment because you instinctively used it to block somebody's fist coming your way. That just never a good thing when you have to explain the knuckle dents in your laptop. So that's everything we've got coming on, and Officer Max Schulte will be joining us. Like I said, he knows far more about all of this than I do, and based on the last 10 minutes, you might think I know a lot, but I really don't. All I know is the topics we're going to discuss, and I think there's a lot of conversation to be had. We could probably make two or three radio shows out of this, but the stuff that's important, the where were we, where are we, where do we need to be, those are the things that that Max and I are going to try to focus on the most. Certainly, we'd like for you to call in with any comments that you have. Like I said, the number's 866-404-6519. You have your voice saved. For posterity's sake, it'll be part of our podcast archived. So if you do call in and you're going to say something you shouldn't say, be prepared to say it phonetically. That would be a good thing. When we get back from our break, Max and I are going to kick off talking about the town crier, the history of it, and how we grew from there. So we will be back with you after this break. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll talk to you in a few.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
It's time to get your boots on with the Boot Campaign with hosts Megan Roth and Bailey Gray, Thursdays at noon, 1 Central on TuggyNet.com, sponsored by Austin Bank. The whole point of the Boot Campaign is to continue the true grassroots initiative developed by a group of patriotic women known as the Boot Girls. Inspired by the true story of Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, the Boot Girls got started with celebrities but want every American to get your boots on by purchasing a pair of the Give Back Combat Boots. The campaign's motto is simple. When they come back, we give back. For more on the Boot Campaign, go to the website, bootcampaign.com. The Boot Campaign Get Your Boots On show will feature discussions on current events impacting the lives of active duty and retired military, interviews with our nation's war heroes, medical professionals, and celebrities who have put their boots on. Do your part and join us for the Boot Campaign Get Your Boots On show with Megan Roth and Bailey Gray, Thursdays at noon, 1 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back. We're here today talking about communications evolution, and joining us is Officer Max Schulte. We're going to start off talking about town criers. If you have any comments or questions, don't forget you can call in on our 800 number. It's 866-404-6519. Now, about these town criers. How are you doing today, Max?
I'm doing good, Frank. How are you today?
I am good. I don't know if you heard the intro to the show. I freely admitted that where communications are concerned, you're far more knowledgeable than I am, and I appreciate you coming on the show today to help me out so that my ignorance doesn't shine quite so bright.
Thanks. I appreciate it, but I'm not an expert, just so your listeners know. So,
you know, real quick, because communication is such a beautiful thing, and words can mean so much. I never wanted to be an expert. I don't know anybody who wants to be an expert, because when you break it up, X is something that used to be, and spurt something very short-lived, and I don't want to be either one of those things.
I think that sounds about right.
So listen, we've obviously in preparation for the show, we've shot some emails back and forth, and one of the things I mentioned, I didn't even know the name for it when I thought about it, was this guy that would scream the time and all's well, and you said, yeah, I'm referring to the town crier. It never even dawned on me. I should have known. That's what it's called. But like everybody does in the modern world, I looked it up on Wikipedia, and did you know that there are still town criers around today?
No, I can't say that I didn't know that one.
it amazes me. Apparently there's a guild for them in England, and here in North America, there are – let me look at this real quick. In both the United States and Canada, there's also a guild of town criers, and they've been used in a lot of places as starting in the 1990s, they've been brought back to share information from town councils and stuff. How cool is that?
Really? I would think that wouldn't be a very efficient way to get your message out there, but I guess for those that aren't plugged in like the rest of us, it could work.
Well, apparently they're mostly used for ceremonial duties, like at the beginning of town hall meetings or stuff like that, but I would have never thought they still existed, and there they are. I think that's just too cool. Thank you for giving me the term town crier so I could look it up, even though we both spelled it wrong.
It almost seems like it would be more of a hobby to me, like ham radio operators, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like. And, you know, when you have like a touristy place, you know, somebody like Salem or something, where they want to have the guy dressed up in the garb of the Revolutionary Times or whatever and standing there with the bell and making pronouncements, because that's what the original town criers were. They made pronouncements as required by the court. So that was their original purpose. I could still see them being used in the touristy areas, like I said, or for ceremonial functions. I guess it would make sense.
I wonder if they called out the docket, too. I don't imagine they were putting your docket on the wall back then.
No, you're probably right. I didn't even think about that. And I guess everybody listening knows, but the docket's the schedule of cases for a court in a given morning or afternoon. So apparently they still dress up in costume and all that. But we've come a long way from that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You go from the town crier who's giving out the orders of the court or proclaiming all's well because he doesn't have anything else to say. And, you know, we come forward in time to it. Before we even had phones, before we had call boxes, and something that you had mentioned – well, we had phones, but before we had call boxes, you had mentioned a system where businesses would put a sign up for a patrolman to come in and use a phone to call in. Can you tell us about that?
Right. Well, it was like a sign or a flag they would put out in front of their business, and agencies would have an agreement with these businesses who were kind of ahead of the times and had telephones because not everybody had them. If for some reason the station needed to get a hold of a particular patrol, they would call the business in the area where the patrol works, say, can you put the flag out for us? Hopefully when the officer rolls by, he's going to see the flag and he'll go inside and say, can I borrow your phone for a moment? And he would call the station and they would give him his next call. Not a very efficient method, but when that's all you have to work with, that's what you got to do.
Well, and it was better than going out to start your shift and then coming in at the end of your shift if you survived your shift and telling your sergeant or your commander or whatever, this is everything that happened today. and you couldn't get dispatched to calls. They couldn't. There was no information exchange. I think that was a big step forward.
Right. Well, also, you didn't want to have to go back out at the end of your shift because they gave you that call when you got back. I got to go back out? You got to be kidding me. I don't think they were paying too much overtime back then.
No, I don't think they did. Probably the federal labor laws didn't exist. But we moved up through time, and call boxes were eventually developed. The guys that are walking the beat have, you know, they can get a call or they can answer a call at least that way through the call boxes. I know I still see some of them in Washington, D.C. Have you seen them in other places in your travels or your work?
Yeah, just about 2 weeks ago, I was up in New Jersey, and we went across a few bridges, and they actually still had call boxes along the bridges for in case somebody breaks down. You can just pick up the handset and tell them that they need assistance out there. They even had those down around the Capitol Beltway, around D.C. on I-495 for a long
right.
time. They would actually have four buttons on the call boxes in that area. One would be for fire, police, ambulance, or service, like a tow truck. And they would just walk up to the box, hit whatever they needed. It would go to a communication center. They would determine what type of call it was. You know, they obviously had a map on the wall that would show them, okay, this call box is located at that interchange. And they would
right.
send the appropriate service out there, whatever they needed.
So it's been modernized, and the system's still in use. We just don't use it in law enforcement anymore.
Right, and a lot of people don't really realize that system has been in use this long. I mean, you still see them on college campuses to contact emergency services, maybe a parking structure, like a parking garage, you'll see them in there.
Right.
Things like that.
And we don't think about it, but there's one in every elevator.
Actually, you're right. I forgot about that.
You open the door, pick up the phone, and somebody's going to be at the other end, and they probably know where you're at before you even say anything, because rest assured, if you say something impolite, they know where to send the police to come talk to you about it, although they don't
right.
expect you to be there. You're going to be long gone.
Then you might get hit with a telephone misuse at the same time.
You know, I don't think there's many people that know that there is a crime called – well, here in Maryland, there's a crime called telephone misuse, telephone harassment. I wonder if that's something they have in every state. You would think they'd have to. But
I would imagine it would go right along with the harassment laws and things like that.
You would think. But we moved from call boxes, which were great, especially if you were on foot and a beat. It was better than having nothing. Even before the phones, though, and I kind of skipped over this, we had people who had to shout or whistle to get their buddy's attention for whatever. So going from all that to be able to go to an in-car radio, you know, once we got more off of our feet and into the cruisers or on the motorcycles or whatever, you have the in-car radio. Now, I'm being careful not to mention the agency you work for per our agreement and for the sake of privacy, because we all need it. But I remember a time when your agency had only in-car radios. There was no portables.
Right.
And that I felt that really put the officer at risk. I mean, like I said, you get out on a traffic stop, you get out to answer a call. Once you're out of the car, you're on your own. And we've come a long way from that with the portables. I guess my question is, was there any benefit to not having the portable, having it in car only?
Well, it was only in car. However, usually they were hooked up to your outside public address speaker, to the speaker box for the siren.
Right.
And you could actually be outside of your car, flip a switch, and you could receive the transmissions that the dispatcher was sending you. You just couldn't respond back until you actually went back to your vehicle. And obviously, you wanted to use those 10 codes back then that you're going to be we're going to talk about later, because they can give you information regarding that vehicle while you're standing right next to it, and the people have no idea what they're telling you. They could be telling you that the vehicle's wanted or that the operator's wanted, things that will usually set somebody off and maybe cause a problem.
Right, which is why today, even with portables, we use those codes, or you see people with earbuds, so that when you're dealing with a suspect or bad guy, they don't realize. I mean, information's power. The more we know that they don't know we know, the better off we are, right?
Right, obviously. It's part of the officer safety that you have to look at. I remember using the outside PA as little as maybe 5 years ago. You'd be on stopping teams of some kind, and you're using your portable radio on a portable to portable channel, which means it's not being repeated. The station's not hearing it. You're just going from my radio to your radio because we happen to be on the same channel. We need to be able to communicate on this stopping team, but we also need to hear if we get a call. So we would actually turn on our outside speaker box. Now, I don't believe that many agencies are doing that anymore because now you have a lot better scanning capability on your portable radios. You can be portable to portable, but scan your main frequency. And if they do call you, you can just switch your portable over.
Right, or it prioritizes to it. I've seen some radios where you can be scanning multiple channels, but if anything comes over on your primary channel, then it stops scanning until you start it scanning again.
Right.
Now,
and
but
also
this presented
back then, they didn't have 100 different channels inside their in-car radios. They only had maybe one or two, depending on who you worked for. One might be a local channel just for your installation where you work at, and then if you leave that installation's area of responsibility, you could flip to another channel that would cover the rest of the area that your department covers.
Right.
Say if you're working in PG County at I don't know PG County that well. I don't know why.
I tell you, I worked for a place called Cottage City for the first, well, after I got out of the military, I did a little bit of time at PG Community College, and then I went to this place called Cottage City, and we had our in-car town radios, which were only for the, actually, obviously for the town, but it was kind of funny because you have police cars and you'd have the truck drivers, the trash collectors, the public service guys all on this one radio channel because it was for the town, but then you could flip a switch and you know, we actually had the ability to get on the county system or the state system. Nobody ever really taught me how to use the state system, so we didn't do that. We kind of were worried we'd get in big trouble if we did, but we were habitually – I mean, we were dispatched by the county, so we had to talk with them regularly. Listen, Max, we're getting ready to come up on our first break with you on the line. When we come back, though, I want to talk – we talk about scanners used by police officers, but I want to talk about the scanners used by the public, both the good guys and the bad guys, and some of the challenges that came in once we started using portable radios and those people developed the ability to listen to what we were doing. So we're going to go to break, folks. Stay with us. Officer Max Schulte and I are going to continue discussing communications when we get back.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
How to invest, where to invest, where to save, where to get the right insurance, what to do about taxes, should I relocate my business or ever purchase a property? That's where Go To My Radio Show comes in. Join host Chris Holt Tuesday afternoons at 1 Pacific, 3 Central on GoToMyRadioShow.com. Choose the right financial professional and learn more about the products and services while learning the terminology and strategies used by these professionals. Go To My Radio Show is unbiased, and Chris Holt, your host, will ask the hard questions and take calls to help you connect with the right professional who can help you better handle your financial and business choices. Go To My Radio Show is not a financial services company and does not offer any financial advice, but we will help you make the right choice when it comes to planning your financial future, and most of all, choosing the right program and the right professional for you. Go To My Radio Show with Chris Holt Tuesday afternoons at 1 Pacific, 3 Central on GoToMyRadioShow.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back. Today we are talking about communications and the evolution of it. Our guest, Max Schulte, is proving to be a very wise and informative gentleman in this conversation. We appreciate him being with us today. As a reminder to you listeners, if you want to call in, our number is 866-404-6519. We'd appreciate your participation, your comments, your observations. So, right before we went to break, we were talking about portable radios, actually talking about in-car radios and their development in the early years. We were talking about scanners and how they were both good and bad. So, Max, you know, one of the comments we had in our email exchange was that sometimes the bad guys would get away because they'd hear the call dispatched about them and what they were doing. Do you know, I mean, is that still an issue for you? I mean, I don't think it's really a problem for us on the agency that I work for, but are you still seeing that as a challenge?
Well, it depends on which agency you work for. Some agencies are more advanced and using trunked systems, encryption on their radios, and some use very simple systems that are easily scanned simply with the push of a button. And I don't think it's as prevalent today as it used to be, the use of scanners. But I've heard stories from my father, who's a retired officer here, and sometimes it helped them, and sometimes it just destroyed their case. They'd be responding to a call, and wherever they were going, they happened to have a scanner handy. Or one of their friends heard a call come out on the scanner for their house, so they would call their friend and say, hey, you need to get out of there because the police are on the way. And then sometimes citizens would call in the police and update them. Say you had a suspect fleeing from a location for whatever reason. They would actually be sitting there on their porch or whatever, having their lemonade or tea, and they would see that vehicle that the police are looking for drive by. So then they would call the police and say, hey, that vehicle just went past my house. It's going this direction. And that actually would help the police sometimes. You're darned if you don't. I mean, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much funding agencies have in order to have these trunk systems and encryption and things like that.
And they've got to focus the dollars where necessary. Absolutely. We have a comment from a TK in New Jersey. He says, definitely feel you on the pros and cons of scanners. They can be used for much good. His local EMS agency listens and responds to calls from the police department scanner. Because there's such a delay, if the call has to go through the police dispatch to the fire dispatch and then back out. So the EMS guys actually just listen to the police scanner and self-dispatch if there's a call, which is fantastic. His question is, have you ever had a negative experience from someone, quote unquote, buffing a call on a scanner from the public, or any negative experience with them in general? I have, back in the day, we used to have a problem. It was a known ring of drug dealers that would listen for us to be dispatched to the area where they were loitering, and we get the loitering call, and they knew we were coming, and they would scatter like roaches, and when a light switches on. Aside from that, I haven't seen – you hear stories about people using scanners to set up ambushes, and ambushes have been on such a rise this year. It's frightening, but I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. What about you, Max? You got a specific experience you can cite where the scanner's been a negative thing for you?
No, I don't have anything specifically to myself. I've only really heard the stories.
Okay. Well, so we know that they can be both good and bad. And when we moved from in-car radios to portable radios, and it became kind of a mixed bag, the scanner problem didn't go away, like you said, until you get to trunk systems. What about repeater systems? Do repeater systems defeat some of the scanner issues, or do they just have to find a new frequency?
No, the repeaters, some people don't quite understand what a repeater is. What a repeater is when I get out of my vehicle.
Reader's Digest condensed version will work.
When I get out of my vehicle, I hit a switch, and I'll get a tone on my radio. That'll tell me that my handheld radio is now linked into my radio in the car, because the handheld radio you have only has a certain range on it. You need to increase that range, basically.
Right.
And what that allows me to do is transmit from my portable radio to the car and then to the station. And then when the station wants to talk to me, the station's message goes to the radio in the car, the repeater forwards it to my portable. Now, this is real time. There's not a delay or anything like that.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if they're using a scanner. They're going to hear you whether or not you're on your car radio or your portable radio.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the repeater, the frequency that your car's receiving you on, is that the same frequency that the car is transmitting on?
Your radio, see, this is where I start getting a little bit fuzzy. The radio can be set up. The portable radio will be on a channel that coincides with the repeater box in the car.
Right.
Then the car will be on the frequency for the station.
That was what I was asking.
If I don't have that repeater switch on, I can talk all day on that portable, and the station's never going to hear me.
Right. Now,
it doesn't matter how close I am to them, they're not hearing anything.
This is why I was asking, because that means there's two different frequencies. And this is how the repeater system in the county where I worked was. Your portable would transmit to a tower on one frequency. The tower would boost it and retransmit it on a different frequency to the dispatch center. And then it would come back the same way. So the scanners that people listening to, they had to be able to hear both frequencies. They had to hear your portable, which they may not have been close enough to hear, so they may only hear part of the conversation. That tower was what they could really hear coming to and from the dispatch center. But they quite often they couldn't hear the portables. And if the portable, we had a talk around channel, we could flip a switch. So, like you say, it wouldn't be hitting the tower. It would be two or three blocks worth of transmit power, essentially. And so we could use it as a talk around without the dispatcher having to hear us. And quite honestly, without our conversations being recorded by the communication system.
Right. And now what they've done is they try to reserve that channel on your portable for the repeater in the car for that particular purpose, because you never know, you might be putting out information that you wouldn't want the station to hear, but someone drives past you with their repeater on, that automatically will put you on repeat.
Right.
And that could cause a problem with your boss. They set up
the awareness is there, and you got to maintain it.
Right. And so now they actually put specific portable to portable channels. They're not going to be able to be repeated. And if you're not within a couple of blocks, you're not going to hear the transmission.
Okay. Speaking of the portable transmissions, let's talk a little bit about UHF versus VHF. In our email exchange, one's apparently better for short range, getting through obstructions and stuff. Other one's better for long range. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
I've used both. I actually currently use both UHF and VHF. I have found that I like the VHF better. It seems to have better clarity in your transmissions, both going out and both transmitting and receiving.
Okay.
It's very good if you're in open areas for going a long way, a long distance. UHF, the wavelength of the signal is different and makes it better for getting through obstructions. If you spend a lot of time in a building downtown or in a downtown area or in a heavily wooded area, places like that, sometimes the UHF is better because of the wavelength. It can get through those obstacles a lot easier. However, UHF transmits at a much higher, it uses more wattage. However,
okay,
you don't get the range of VHF.
So it uses the power to pump through obstacles, essentially.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now, what's the difference between a repeater system and a trunked system?
Well, a trunked system is usually set up so that you don't have a repeater in your car. You'll see a lot of guys, they don't even use their car radio. All they use is their handheld radio. The nice thing about that is if you get a bailout and you go running after somebody, the next thing that pops into your head is, did I hit my repeater?
Right.
No, I didn't, so I'm on my own. I need to get on the phone or something like that if you have a phone.
Right.
Trunk systems, you don't have to worry about that because basically the tower is your repeater to send the information. Now, trunk systems are very complex, although they work very nicely. I use one a lot, and what it does is your radio, your portable radio, is set up with what are called talk groups.
Right.
And each installation in your agency, or each unit for that matter, could have their own talk group. So if you wanted to talk to auto theft, you would simply switch to their talk group. Now, it's not one channel that you're actually transmitting and receiving on. It's multiple channels. They are able to be scanned. However, it's a lot tougher because you need to know every channel that that agency is using on their system, but you also need to know what the talk group channel the talk group numbers are. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything. Those are very good systems. They're more secure than your normal low band single channel systems where you just use the same channel to talk back and forth all the time.
Okay. So definitely some strengths there. Any weaknesses to them that you can think about off the top of your head?
It's important to have redundancy with a trunk system as far as, because it's computer controlled and computers can fail for one reason or another. So
no. Really? You're kidding.
I know it's hard to believe that a government computer could fail you, but it is important that you have a redundant backup system because if one system goes down, it has a backup so that you don't lose communications. Now, I know that the agencies using trunk systems, they also have basically the old school low band, so they don't lose everything. They can revert back.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, we're about probably a minute and change away from the break. Real quick, and this is going to put you on the spot, because I'm gonna ask you to do this fast. What's your favorite? We're talking about phonetic alphabet. What's your favorite acronym that you couldn't say the real words, but you can say the phonetic alphabet and get away with it?
Bravo Foxtrot.
Really?
Yep.
I'd have to think about that one to see. I'd say Bravo Sierra. We throw that one out all the time. Bravo Foxtrot. Okay. I'll have to leave that one alone for a minute. If you put a Delta on the end of it, I would get that. Bravo Foxtrot Delta. I just don't get the Bravo Foxtrot. I'll have to think.
I'm sure you'll be able to figure out pretty quickly.
I'm pretty sure. But when we come back, and we are down under a minute now, we talk a little bit about those phonetic alphabets. I think your agency uses the military one last time I dealt with them.
1074. That means negative.
Hold that thought, because we're going to go over it when we get back. We're going to talk about the phonetic alphabets, signals, 10 codes, and then we're going to get into some of the laptops and voice over IP stuff and some of the interoperability. But when we come back, we're coming back to our last segment with Max Schulte on communications evolution. Talk to you in a few.
Get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list. Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Evermore, people have the means to live, but no meaning to live for. These are the words of Dr. Viktor Frankl, the inspiration for the movie Viktor and I. That's V-I-K-T-O-R and I, movie.com. And TalkSense Radio, The Meaning Connection, with host Mary Simaluka and frequent contributor Alexander Vesely. Friday afternoons at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. More and more people today are discarding their quest for money, possessions, and things, and are instead beginning a serious quest to find meaning in life. Until now, these discussions were historically in the hands of priests, ministers, and scribes, then to philosophers, psychiatrists, and psychologists. Now, these deep discussions are where they should be, in the hands of individuals, on the air, with you. TalkSense Radio, The Meaning Connection, with your host, Mary Simaluka, and frequent contributor, Alexander Vesely. Friday afternoons at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
And welcome back again to Officer Radio here on Officer.com. We're talking with Officer Max Schulte about communications evolution. We did have a comment come in via email that we addressed for a gentleman, TK, in New Jersey. If you have a comment, you can email it to me at frankborelli@officer.com, or you can call us on 866-404-6519. Now, as promised before we went to the break, we're back with Max. We're going to talk about phonetic alphabets. And while we were on break, he filled me in on something that I didn't know and put a smile on my face. And thank you for the entertainment value there, Max. Phonetic alphabets, the agency I used, I was in the military, and we used Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. The military phonetic alphabet was very obviously designed not for ease or simplicity, but because the words used, it was hard to misunderstand them on communication systems that might be breaking up, where you might only hear piece of Romeo or Sierra. Yeah, Robert and Sam are a whole lot easier for common day usage, but you can misunderstand them easier too. Your agency uses the military phonetic alphabet, does it not?
No, we actually use the civilian one. A Adam, B Boy, C Charles.
Okay.
Of course, I was in the military too, just like you. I was an MP.
Right.
Did 5 years active duty. And I'm kind of lucky because my wife was an MP also. So we can actually speak in code to each other sometimes. And we have our first little boy on the way. So it'll probably come in pretty handy down the road.
Congratulations, and just remember that they learn really fast, so by the time that young man's three, he'll be able to communicate in alphabet in phonetics, and you guys will be out of luck.
Hopefully that means he'll have a head start if he decides to go into military or law enforcement.
You would be surprised. You know, my youngest is going on 14, and he's training right now to be an emergency search team member for the Civil Air Patrol. And dude, congratulations. There's nothing better than parenthood if you do it right. And as long as I've known you, I'm sure you'll do it right. So you guys use the civilian phonetics,
right?
As do most of the agencies in the area that I work. But, you know, you talk about being an MP. I'm going to tell you a quick story because you'll find the humor in it. Do you remember the movie Stripes?
Absolutely.
Bill Murray. And do you remember the guy Francis?
Yep.
Whose nickname was Psycho?
Right.
Well, my real name is Francis, so when I went into basic training, my nickname was Psycho. And on the day we were doing communications training, and everybody's in field gear, so I've got on my Kevlar helmet with the cover and the elastic band that went around, and somebody had written Psycho across the front of it with a black permanent marker. And so I get up to this lieutenant, and he says, and you're having to spell whatever. You're supposed to spell your last name phonetically. So I've been standing there practicing Borelli phonetically, and I walk up in front of him, and he says, hey, spell Psycho. And I was like, oh, heck, what do I got to do? And you do it. You know, it just takes a second to think about it, and you crank it out. But it was one of those moments where Hollywood impacted my day of training as an MP, and it was an interesting thing.
Right.
Largely, phonetic alphabets are – if you've got half a brain and somebody's using the civilian one and you're used to the military one or vice versa, you figure it out pretty quick. There are some abbreviations, like we said, that you had Bravo Foxtrot, and I wasn't sure what that meant, and thank you for filling me in. Alpha Mike Foxtrot's one of my favorites, and yeah, I stole that right out of the movie The A-Team. You know, there's the longer ones and the shorter ones, and the Bravo Foxtrot Delta, BFD. People understand these things. At some point, you almost wonder, why do you use them? But, well, we're on the radio, and that's why we're using them, because we can't say those words without getting in trouble.
Exactly.
So they're pretty standard, even though they're different agency to agency. What's not is the 10 codes and the signals.
They can be a nightmare sometimes.
They really can. What's on your agency, if you have an off, if you can tell me, and if you can't, that's fine. If you have an officer with an emergency assistance need, is there a signal or a 10 code for that?
If I recall correctly, it's 1078, but we don't even really use it. And you said signals.
Right.
We don't use signals, but everybody knows what a signal 13 is. So if you're having trouble, you're just going to probably end up saying that. We have so many 10 codes in the academy. I don't know how many push-ups I did because they'd ask me what a – 1059 was. Now today I know that that means it's an escort, because usually we could get some overtime for it. But, I mean, we did a lot of push-ups, because we had 99 of them we had to memorize.
90. Wow. See, what you know what, on the other side of that, though, the agency I worked for, we had 10 codes and we had signals. So, like, if you're going signal 64, it was a homicide. Rather than having a 10 code for a homicide, and you go to a signal 9, which is a traffic accident. For you guys, that's what, a 1055 or something?
A traffic accident is a 1050, and they would either tell you if it was a PI for personal injury or a PD for property damage only.
Damage, right. So those can get confusing going agency to agency, area to area. I'm glad that the signal 13 is kind of well known around the Washington metropolitan area as an emergency call. But you know, my agency 1078 is routine backup. Could you get any more radically different than a 1078 being an officer in need of emergency assistance versus 1078 routine backup? And I even hate the word routine.
You could do a call for a 1032. For us, that's a man with a gun, so it's a high priority call. Pretty serious event, probably. But in one municipality I know of, a 1032 means sufficient manpower on the scene. I remember first time I was working in that municipality on their radio system, I was like, have they had like 15 men with a gun calls today?
And you would think, wow, that's busy, and it's something completely, you know, for my agency, that would be a signal 7A, a suspicious person who's armed.
There you go.
So they can definitely be different. But I tell you what, let's move on. We haven't had a chance yet to talk about laptops, which are being used more and more for communications, dispatching back and forth. Pros and cons, like them, don't like them?
They serve a great purpose. At one point, I found myself getting a little too dependent on the laptop and forgetting, hey, I've got a radio I can use. I really do like them. They provide the individual cop out on the street with a lot more information readily available at his fingertips or her fingertips, rather than having to try and get the dispatcher to run everything you need. We know sometimes dispatchers will get a little upset, and
you
don't want to make them upset, because they can make your life miserable out on the street. So you can run their driver's licenses, vehicles, some criminal history. You can get booking photos. I mean, nowadays when somebody gives me a name, I can confirm with a booking photo, even on my smartphone now, whether or not they're giving me the right name. And I don't know why people still insist on giving you a bad name, but they do. Usually it's pretty easy to figure out within a few minutes these days.
Because they're stupid. That's why they're criminals.
And the dispatcher can send you messages on the laptop that aren't priority calls. Or what always happened when you got that suspicious person call? They give out a description, and then you got 10 other guys. What was the clothing description again?
Yeah.
Now they can just send everybody a message on the laptop, on the computer, send out a message with the description of the person or the vehicle that you're looking for.
Right. Right. You know, and I remember a day when you get a false name and you'd have no way of verifying it because it matched a general physical description, but the guy wouldn't have any ID.
Right.
I remember, because I was a little bit uptight about things, I got taught this by a sergeant, though. I would clean the back window on my cruiser and have him put both of his hands on the back window, and then I would print the window. I would take all the information that he gave me, fill out print cards, and send them in, and then we had that alias attached to him if it wasn't him, and then if he was in the system, we get the real information back with the print cards. But that was a lot of work for basic versus what we can do today, where you can practically scan a thumbprint on a street and get an ID.
Right, and that's still very expensive technology, and a lot of places don't have that yet. Great technology if you can get your hands on it, but a lot of people are still having to. Now, basically, all we do is a fingerprint card and fax that off to the FBI, and usually within a couple of hours, we've got a response back. And as long as they've been arrested and the FBI had their prints on file, you can get something back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the caveat. If you're the first person to catch that fish, though, you never know what you've got.
And I always ran into that a lot with hitchhikers. Hitchhikers and homeless folks, they very rarely had ID on them. And if they did give you their name and things like that, sometimes they were giving you the bad name. We didn't get laptops until after I had gone to investigations, so I wasn't out on patrol when I got it. But even when I was in investigations, I found it very useful. And almost kind of, you almost kind of become dependent on technology.
Oh, no
doubt. I remember
doubt.
One day I was going to a house to do an interview, and there were no markings on the house for which house number it was. There were several in a row that weren't marked, and I was like, well, I need to run the tag number on that car. I turned to my computer. I'm like, oh, my computer's not on yet, and it's going to take 10 minutes for that to happen. Oh, wait a minute. I can call the station on the radio.
There you
go. So, can you run this tag for me? Let me know what address it comes back to so I can confirm that this is the right house.
You know, there's an agency I'm familiar with that it's relatively new. It's been around for, I don't know, five or 7 years, something like that. And the chief that was the first chief they had that was chosen to build it focused heavily on technology, wanted to make sure every car had a laptop, every officer had a smartphone or BlackBerry. And you know, my question was, are you getting long guns? Everybody's got a handgun. Everybody's got a taser. Everybody's got their everything. You getting long guns? You have a shotgun? You have patrol rifles? What do you have? Well, we're not going to focus on that right now.
Now you're getting into my area of expertise.
There you go. There you go. But it surprised me they were more worried about the technology.
We've got another two-hour show ahead of us.
It surprised me they were so into the technology, and I'll say this, and then we're going to have to actually try to close the show, but I've never seen a laptop handcuff a bad guy. Have you?
No, but it's helped me put handcuffs on a bad guy.
And as long as we keep it in that perspective, I think then we'll do okay. The technology that we have today, all the communications devices that we've talked about as far as portable radios, scanners when we use them to help us, laptops, the fingerprint scanners that are portable on the street, the handheld, all that stuff is great as long as it safely supports the officers who are enforcing the law and helps keep us safe and helps us put bad guys behind the bars. I mean, to me, that's what it's all about.
Well, what a lot of guys need to remember for officer safety is don't use those technological devices when you're one-on-one. If you've got backup there, by all means, go ahead and use it. But if you're standing there one-on-one, don't be on your smartphone or on your laptop trying to run somebody because your head is buried in that thing. Look at anybody walking down the street. They've got their head buried in their cell phone text messaging, and they're oblivious to what's going on around them. You just set yourself up for a bad situation there. Just use your radio. If you need to confirm ID with a photograph or something like that on your portable device, get somebody there to back you up. Tell them to watch him while you take care of business.
And Max, I think that's probably the best way to end this show, guys. Thanks for being with us today, Max. I appreciate your being here and your expertise and your knowledge and wisdom. Listeners, thank you for being with us for the hour today. We appreciate your time. The show will be archived, podcast, and on the radio page, and we'll be back next Thursday with a new show. Thanks for listening to Officer Radio on Officer.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week,